The ISU Athletics Director job expected to draw a lot of interest.
Because it's a well-resourced institution, you want to be able to go somewhere that has the resources to win.
But there are concerns about workplace culture the previous AD left behind. That story next on Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, training for the circus means a lot of tears, confronting fears, and learning to trust.
But then they come out so strong, and they're all prepared and ready for real life.
The Gamify Circus returns to CEFQ Arena this weekend, and a Bloomington-based rockabilly band keeps it old school, releasing its first album exclusively on vinyl.
When we're going to these music festivals and these car shows, that's what they're looking for.
Those stories follow a Bloomington Normal News update, which is just ahead. This is Sound Ideas on 891WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story continues with local patient Bill McKay.
I remember the process. Seeing those results on paper, now all of a sudden, that's me. Now I know what it is. Now I get it. And that's exactly where I need the help.
Bill's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. The future of Illinois State University's athletics department is very much in flux. That follows the resignation of athletics director Kyle Brennan amid questionable spending on a donor trip with Aaron Rossi. An interim AD starts May 1st, and a full financial audit of athletics is planned. WGLT's Ryan Denham has been reporting on this, and he's in studio with me now to share more about what we've learned about athletics during the Kyle Brennan era. Ryan, thanks for being here in studio on Sound Ideas.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Yeah, I've been fine. You have been talking with a lot of people who worked in athletics. What are you hearing?
We are hearing that it has been a tough place to work. Some of that is structural and predates Kyle Brennan's time here at ISU. There are long hours in athletics. You got games at night, working during the day. The pay is low for most people who work in athletics. You have those certain times of year where seasons are overlapping, so you have multiple sports, big sports that are happening concurrently. And there's been a lot of turnover, a lot of staff retirements and resignations in the last few years, about 70 since Kyle has gotten here. I interviewed 10 former and current staff members just to kind of hear what their experiences have been.
So what are you hearing?
And some of the common threads that I heard over and over again, one was related to Kyle Brennan's use of alcohol on the job, drinking at events, at professional functions. Some of the people I talked to were made uncomfortable by that. They thought it was unusual. Larry Lines was Kyle Brennan's predecessor. Larry had a very different approach or philosophy on, is it okay for athletic staff to drink at events like this? So that was one contrast. Another was that there was a personnel matter involving one of Kyle Brennan's subordinates that led to a formal ethics inquiry here at ISU. It's unclear how that got resolved. Were those allegations proven, debunked, something between? It agitated the staff, and that was certainly felt by a lot of different people.
Okay, that's a lot of information. You mentioned there have been 70 retirements or resignations since Kyle Brennan began. First of all, is that a lot of turnover for an athletics department, and is it a red flag, I guess?
Well, it's tricky, yes and no. There are a lot of other big forces at work here beyond just one athletics director. Kyle Brennan started during COVID, when a lot of professionals were sort of reevaluating their work-life balance, how much they're getting paid. Another big change in college athletics generally that was happening right in this time was the dawn of name, image, and likeness rules, essentially allowing student athletes to make money off of who they are. That's a game changer, and no pun intended, for athletics. Also, ISU is a mid-major school, so not like an Alabama or one of these big giant schools. It's called a mid-major, and it's often used as a stepping stone for younger athletic professionals, which can lead to churn. All that said, 70 people in that period of time is a lot statistically compared to recent years. And I talked to a lot of people who said, yeah, some of it was COVID. Yeah, some of it was long hours. But Kyle's behavior and his leadership style made it worse. I got some additional context on why this matters from a guy named Jason Belzer, who's a consultant who's worked a lot in college sports and is the publisher of Athletic Director U.
If you look at mid-major institutions that have been successful in their athletic pursuits, and it's not just mid-majors, it's high majors, it's any institution, continuity matters a lot, right? Continuity of leadership from the university perspective, continuity of leadership within the athletics department, continuity of leadership in the coaching space. If you have high turnover, usually it doesn't work.
What are the leaders of ISU saying about that workplace culture that was inside athletics?
Well, yeah, some next steps that are happening here. The interim athletics director, Jerry Beggs, is going to be taking over May 1st. Our own Charlie Schlenker here interviewed ISU interim president Tarhule a couple of days ago. One of the questions he asked was about rebuilding workplace culture. Here's what he had to say.
I think your messaging, your actions, those are important. First, you have to be clear about exactly what it is you're trying to do. And you have to act as such. In some ways, that's what we're doing here. We feel like some of the decisions that were made didn't quite live up to the expectations that the university has of for leadership in that area, and we're taking actions to show that what we think about that.
Okay, so that's President Tarhule. That's quite a situation to walk into as an interim, just really early on. I'm going to ask you about the impact all of this would have on ISU's ability to raise money for athletics moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how that's going to play out. Some donors might be concerned or upset about what's happened. Some donors might have liked Kyle Brennan's approach and what he was trying to do, so they may be upset that he's gone. I spoke with Virginia Harrison, an assistant professor at Clemson University who's researched and practiced in fundraising and in sports, and she says that institutions can overcome moments like this if they have done a good job at donor stewardship and handholding of donors all along.
We're talking a lot about the need for listening and the need for dialogue after a crisis situation or anything that has to do with questions of ethics. So when we talk about dialogue, we're not talking about, just sitting down and having a town hall, but dialogue, particularly in the literature, is this idea about using empathy, listening to what people are saying, being self-reflective, saying, okay, maybe there are policies or things that need to change beyond simply letting somebody go from their job. Maybe there's things that we need to do better. What are our donors saying? Are their main concerns, and how can we respond to them in a way that does reassure them, right? It is not just lip service, but something that is actually true and genuine.
Okay, so what are you hearing needs to happen next?
Well, I think we've said that Jerry Beggs is going to be taking over as interim athletics director on May 1st, so still a few days away, and then hiring a permanent person in that role, probably next year. Full financial audit, ISU says, is going to be happening of athletics. And, this other consultant that I spoke to, Jason Belzer, also had a few interesting thoughts on who the next athletics director will be and what that search could look like. He says it'll be an attractive job despite all this because, in part, ISU is a well-resourced institution compared to other schools, especially in the Missouri Valley Conference. He says ISU will be at a disadvantage, though, if the next athletics director responds to all this by overcorrecting and becoming too conservative about fundraising, especially in this name, image, and likeness era.
And because success in NIL now requires aggressiveness in fundraising, particularly at a mid-major institution, the school is going to be behind. Like, just no question. The university administration is almost certainly not going to care about NIL when they're trying to make sure that they're not creating another circumstance that creates a black eye for the university.
Ryan Denham has been in studio to talk about the latest on the situation in ISU athletics. Ryan, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas today.
Thanks, Sean.
You can read more about Brennan's tenure in athletics and see the entire story at WGLT.org. Coming up next week in Sound Ideas, you'll hear from one of ISU's most famous alums. She's back on campus to help grow the next generation of thespians. Emmy Award-winning Jane Lynch on Monday.
5 days gone by in this economy, of course, and then two words, people, debt and limit. The months in this economy to come, next time on Marketplace.
Listen this afternoon at 5:30 on WGLT 89.1 FM and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. I'm John Norton. For more than 90 years, the Gamma Phi Circus has dazzled Central Illinois families with acrobats, tightrope walkers, dancers, bicycle tricksters, jugglers, and more. WGLT's Lauren Wernicke stopped by Sefke Arena as Gamma Phi made final preparations on tonight's program called Dance On.
I started in show business in 1978.
That's Ivan Stoynev, the artistic director of Gamma Phi Circus at Illinois State University. Gamma Phi is the oldest of the two remaining collegiate circuses. The other is at Florida State University. Stoynev originally came to the United States from Bulgaria as part of a teeter board act.
I did 4 years with them. Then went back home again, toured in Europe, Kuwait. Then come back here again on 88. I did another 4 years with Ringling Brothers and Barney and Bailey. Then I did Japan tour for them. From Japan, I moved to Mexico for some shows.
This is just the middle of Stoynev's staggering list of tour stops and sit-downs that includes time with some of the country's best circuses, Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, and the Big Apple Circus.
My entire life have been circus. My entire family is from circus. I met my wife, Maritza Ataide, which is the fourth generation circus performer. And her parents own the oldest circus in Mexico. It's 134 years right now. So I went to perform for the 100th anniversary of the show there. And actually, I was the first Bulgarian to get to perform in circus in Mexico.
Stoynev's son Christian attended ISU because of Gamma Phi. Christian Stoynev is now a professional performer, mainly doing an acrobatic act with a chihuahua named Scooby. That act placed in the top 12 in America's Got Talent season 9.
And before that, we didn't know nothing about the program. And I started knowing more about the program, more about the history, the circus history in town. And I really fall in love with it, and that's what brought me here.
Tell me a little bit more about how circus is perceived here in the United States.
Lately, and I'm saying lately for a few years already, I can see that the young generation start treating it as an art. And they are right now we have 120 students, which is our biggest number. But they start treating circus as art. In the back, probably 10 years ago, I did have the same feeling that circus here is not given the level that needs to be. But the good thing is it's moving forward towards that direction, especially this year when Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus is going to open again after they closed the show, I believe, 4 years ago.
I had no idea that they were coming back.
Yes, they are coming back, and they completely restructure. There won't be no animals. But it would be more like an art show, like a Cirque du Soleil show. And I think thanks to Cirque du Soleil, Big Apple Circus, and Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, the audience and the people in the United States started understanding more about circus art.
Even though this is a student organization, you can't major in circus. They're majoring in computer science or accounting. Do students come to ISU because they know this program is here?
Yes, we do have a lot of students that just come for the program. And the luckiest thing is that they get out of college with second profession. So it's a huge benefit for the program, for the students especially. There is no cost to them at all. And they come out after 4 years graduating and have an option on a second profession or third.
What do you think is the appeal? Is it the social aspect? Is it the physical aspect? The performance? All of the above, probably. But tell me a little bit about what sparks your passion for circus and then is passed down to these kids.
I always said that our students from our program are the hardest working students here in campus. And they also come out with a lot of examples from real life that they catch up way early at that stage.
Down.
learn to work with people. They learn to trust people. Because trust is involved here a lot. If you're an aerialist and you trust five more people, they have to pull you up in the air 30 feet up. They go through a lot of tears, pain, like I say, afraid of heights in the beginning. But then they come out so strong and they're all prepared and ready for real life.
Gamma Phi Circus presents Dance On Friday and Saturday at CEFQ Arena at Illinois State University. I'm Lauren Warnicke.
The Gamma Phi Circus performs at 7 p.m. tonight, plus 1 and 7 p.m. tomorrow.
Support for arts and culture programming on WGLT comes from PNC Financial Services. We're focusing on giving back as part of an ongoing commitment to the community PNC serves.
This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. I'm John Norton. Christopher Myers loves vintage rockabilly. The frontman for Bloomington-based Union Avenue tells WGLT his personal attachment to that sound is one reason the band stays in that old school lane, but that ethic also serves Union Avenue's wider mission and is why the band released its debut EP exclusively on vinyl.
You know, within the vintage scene and the rockabilly community that we're a part of, people are really, really into vinyl. And so when we're going to these music festivals and these car shows, that's what they're looking for. And so we thought, you know, we're going to have a CD released hopefully later this year.
You will, okay. However,
with some originals that we're working on. But people really want, and I want to put out my own record. So did the other guys. So we thought, we're going to do this right. We're going to self-press it. We went to a recording studio up in Crete, Illinois.
What's the name of the studio?
Custom Recording Company.
Okay.
And it was a converted old schoolhouse in the middle of nowhere. I mean,
well,
very
cool
small town.
How cool is that?
And I mean, it was probably the closest that we would have gotten to recording at Sun Studios back in the day without actually doing that. We recorded, my vocal mic was the exact same model vocal mic that Sam Phillips at Sun recorded Elvis at.
You mentioned the rockabilly scene. Are you talking about like Illinois regional or Bloomington normal? Because I didn't know there's a scene in town. So.
Yeah, well, we're pretty much it.
Yeah, okay,
we're
yeah.
trying to make it something.
Okay.
But really globally, you know, there's a lot of festivals in Spain and in Europe that we would love to play, hopefully in the future. Last year, we played in May at the Eastside Boogie, which was in Nashville. A lot of vintage clothing vendors and pinup contests and hot rod cars and...
Well, let's get into one of the songs that you recorded from this this album. How about Love My Baby?
Sure, let's hear it.
That old Hayden Thompson song.
Absolutely.
Yes, I love my baby. She's the baby's to herself. Yes, I love my baby. She's the baby's to herself.
This is not a modern rockabilly.
No.
You have a vintage sound going on.
Yeah, we recorded mono and... with vintage equipment and, again, vintage instruments. I mean, Steve, our bass player, his bass is like a post-war, I think it's from like 47 K. I think it's a K. Upright bass, and my guitar is a 1957 Magnetone Mark V.
You're not a real rockabilly band if you don't have an upright bass, right?
I would agree with that, probably. I mean, maybe I'll get some flack for that, but in my opinion, yes.
You mentioned Elvis, and you covered a song that Elvis is known for, although he didn't write it, and he wasn't the original hit maker on this.
Correct.
Let's take a listen to Money Honey, your version of it.
You know the landlord who rang on my front door bell. I let it rain for a long, long spell. I went to the window, I peeked through the blind, and asked him to tell me what was on his mind.
How much does Elvis mean to you?
It's funny you say that. I was a huge Elvis fan as a kid. Absolutely ate everything up. You know, visited Memphis as a kid, went to Sun, went to Graceland, and, you know, had a bunch of his records and everything. And then I kind of fell out of it unintentionally. You know, you grow up, life happens. And I never, like, disliked Elvis, but I wasn't as big of a fan. You know, life happens. But then the Elvis movie came out recently, And that kind of reinvigorated my love for Elvis, and now I'm back.
You mentioned that you're going to have maybe some original songs coming on a new album, perhaps?
Correct, yeah, a new CD we're hoping for later this year.
So are you a songwriter by trade?
Well, I don't know what's the definition of by trade. I mean, I've written songs before.
I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Yes, I have.
When you think about writing lyrically for a new rockabilly song, do you does vintage also cross your mind when you're writing lyrically? Because it does, obviously, musically.
Yeah, not so much lyrically. I mean, it seems like all the songs I've written about right now are about a girl, whether good or bad. That's just kind of how it goes for me. But I know my my bass player, Steve Connect, is going to be writing a song about hot rods. So I've got a 54 Chevy that I actually drove to the studio today.
No
and
kidding.
So I think he named it 54 something 54 Chevy. So
okay.
So, you know, that's a big part of the scene as well, is the hot rod community. Because a lot of these festivals that we go to, I mean, when the festival we went to in Nashville was more music-centered festival, but we're playing a festival in Iowa and later on in another one in Wisconsin later this year, and those are more car-centered, hot rod culture festivals with music versus like Flip. Some of them are music festivals with hot rod cars, kind of as an afterthought or just part of it, but the music is the center, and sometimes it's Flip. Oh, yeah.
How much time are you putting into this?
The band?
I'm guessing you've got a, quote, full-time day job.
Yep. I sell suits at Von Maur. So if you need a suit, let me know.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's and that's funny you say that, because it's really all three of us. I mean, we have a text chain that we're talking all day, every day, you know, outside of work, just about, you know, networking and bookings. And, well, we need to contact this person to get to secure this gig, or we need to work on this new song, or when's practice next? And, you know, it's really like full-time, another full-time job, honestly.
Yeah.
But we really make a point to do that, because we don't want to be a garage band. I mean, we're really trying to get something higher, and that's at least the end goal, is to try to elevate our product, the music, you know? And so we're really pushing to try to get a high-quality product out there. And in order to do that, you got to put in the work.
Well, fun album. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Union Avenue, Christopher Myers. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Of course. Thank you.
Union Avenue is having a free show at McGuire's in downtown Bloomington tomorrow night to celebrate the release of its debut EP on vinyl. And that is Sound Ideas today. WGLT's news magazine is made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton. Story help today came from WGLT's Ryan Denham in studio and Lauren Warnicki. The show was produced by Samantha Hill. This is 891WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media, part of the NPR network.